Start your own radio show now and join our amazing radio family of fun and interesting talent. Be the radio star you've always wanted to be. Visit LATalkRadio.com or email info at LATalkRadio.com now and start your own show today.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
LA Talk Radio, this is Max and Friends. I'm your host, Max Tucci. Welcome back to another Sunday night of Max and Friends. That was Monroe King. I get tweets often saying, who does your theme song, Max and Friends? The one and only Monroe King. I just spoke to her last week. She's doing amazing. She's like, really, I love Monroe. She's doing her thing. So Monroe King sends that song. I just love it. Max and Friends. But tonight here on Max and Friends, we've got a great show coming up. Why? Because it was a show that I was on this past Friday called Power of Perception Radio. And I had a great interview on that show. They had me on as a guest. And I wanted to share with you tonight. I'm in Colorado tonight. And I'm so sorry. I know we were supposed to do our Facebook Live with Ash and Gordana. Gordana's on Twitter at My Power Talk. Ash, you can find him, Ash R-U-I-Z. I'm on Twitter at Max Tucci. So we're supposed to have a Facebook Live is my point. And we wanted to really iron out all the technical issues that might have presented themselves. So I'm sorry that we didn't get that. I know you tweeted me saying, oh, we thought you were doing a Facebook Live. It will happen. We're working on it. So just be in touch. Stay tuned to me on Twitter at Max Tucci. And of course on Instagram to the number two, to the Max Tucci. So great thing. Summer is in full swing. I hope you all are doing well. Tweet me at Max Tucci. Let me know what's going on in your life. I'm so grateful that you tune into Max and Friends. So tonight I want you to hear this interview. I was a guest on the Power of Perception Radio. So it'll be playing in just a moment. I have to congratulate my friend Whoopi Goldberg. She received the Disney Legendary Award. So that was really exciting to read that. And so, mazel tov, Whoopi. Whoop, how you doing? So anyhow, all right, everyone, I'm going to let you tune into this show that I was on. And just remember to take life to the max. Be kind to one another. Love one another. You know, if there's whatever bullshit happening in your life, let it go. Be kind to yourself. Let it all go. You know, we were having a really good conversation here in Colorado. And really, it came up in my spirit that we hold on to so much stuff. And when you hold on to all of that, what happens is it's like a copper pot starts getting tarnished. So clean yourself up. Let it go. Release yourself from whatever it is you need to let yourself be released from. And good night and good karma. Stay tuned to the end of the show. It's going to be a great one. And let me know what you think. Tweet me at Max Tucci. And it's going to be the first time I'm hearing the show, too. So tweet me live. Get them down to live tweet because I'll be here for the next hour on Twitter at Max Tucci. And I'll be listening to the show, too. So good night, good karma, and remember to take life to the max. And now, the Power of Perception Radio.
I'm Max Tucci. He's an inspirational thinker and speaker. He's an author, TV radio show host. He does just about everything and does some really cool stuff. So we're going to talk to him about being present moment-minded, the value of as such. We're going to talk to him about gratitude, the power therein when trying to bring a powerful and positive message, and all points in between. Let's merge that call now. Max, are you with us?
Good morning, Scott. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for taking time out of what seems like a schedule that would need 30 hours to make everything be complete, 30 hours in a day. So for folks who are not aware of your work through LA Talk Radio and other projects, kind of give us just a little bit of your background, a Reader's Digest version, and we'll jump in from there.
Absolutely. So thanks again for having me here. You know, the Reader's Digest version of who I am and what I do and everything is I grew up in an amazing family. My family, my grandfather had Delmonico's restaurant downtown in New York, Wall Street area. So growing up was always in this lavish lifestyle. And then really merging out and opening up my wings and spreading out to discover who I was an amazing journey and still is an amazing journey. And through that journey, I've discovered radio. I have a radio show, Max and Friends, on LA Talk Radio. I have a television show in South Florida called Eye on the People with Max Tucci. And in the meantime, I always find time to give back. So giving back and being charitable and getting involved with charities and being in this philanthropic world is something that's really close to my heart. And being on America's Next Top Model helped to build a platform for all of this. So, you know, a lifestyle expert, television, radio personality, and I take life to the max. I mean, really, I just live in the present moment and enjoy everything. And like you said, this could take 30 hours. To me, the illusion of time is a beautiful thing. So I'm looking forward to being on your show today.
And I appreciate, you know, the one thing I really like about the bio you sent my team, as well as just doing a little bit of research around the projects you're involved in, you master capturing the moment so well. And I think there's an art form to that. Is that something you learned young in childhood? Is that something you learned as you got into entertainment? Or is that just a life philosophy that you've carried with you and expanded upon?
I think it's a combination of all of them. And one thing, I mean, you know, on radio, I think the power of now is really important, because when your show starts at noon, you better be there in that now moment. So I think being in the entertainment industry, when things are on a schedule, because I'm not on a schedule, I love to just spread my wings and fly. But when you have the time schedule of that you have to be here for this is going to start then, I think that's something that put me into the present moment. But growing up as a child too, I was able to always just celebrate the moment. You know, I had a family. My father would always spontaneously take us to Italy, and my mother would take us on holiday. So it was always living in the moment and really not planning, but just being available to what was there. And, you know, the power of perception, that's what it's all about. You know, when people perceive, the one thing people perceive about me is like, oh, we didn't know if we can book you because you always seem to be here and there and all over. And I say to them, I'm available. I'm always available, because at the moment when they need me, it's easy for me to get on a plane and jump on that plane and go to where they need me to be. So I think really the power of perception for people is to know that be available. And when you're available to the now moment, which is all we really have, it frees us from the past, it frees us from the future, and it gives us this moment to really just focus on what we're doing. There's a lot of people who want to know about their future, people who live in their past. For me, it's really my next breath. As long as I know what my next step is, then I'm able to do the next step and the next step and the next step. So really, the power of now is knowing where you are in that moment and knowing the simplicity of what your next step is.
And sometimes being flexible in making the next step as well is integral to the success, because you can have the step planned out in your head, but if something happens, you know, much in the organic nature, such as this conversation will unfold, if you say something and I have a list of questions and I sit here and I'm rigid and I go, well, I was going to ask this and this and this, it won't be real. That flexibility
right.
is there too, no?
Absolutely. I always revert to nature. No one tells a flower how to grow. It blooms naturally. Every petal unfolds naturally. And some petals are crooked, and that's okay. So it's always to that notion of just let life unfold naturally. And just being okay and realizing where I am right now is where I'm supposed to be. And if you missed that question, or if you didn't have that question for me, that's okay, because you'll come up with another one. So being able to be fluid and going with the flow and just going like, you know, like a tree in the wind, I think that's really a beautiful, nature's always a reminder of how living life is really a beautiful thing, and just allowing yourself to be flexible.
I love the idea as well that you do a lot of charitable work with children and young people. Talk to us about how you got into that world, the philanthropic world, and why children is a central cause to what it seems that you're truly about.
Well, absolutely. So my grandfather, when we go back to the 1930s, during Prohibition, Recession, etc., it was always part of him to give back to New York, to the community. So he always fed the homeless in the evening when the restaurant would close for their break. He would feed them, and then that my father then took that trade. And then my mother was also – my mother is very much involved in philanthropy. So at a young age, it was kind of what we were taught, you know. And after we were taught that, it was something that it felt good. And I remember at 13 years old, a friend of mine died of a brain tumor. And my mother said they were going to this hospital in the Bronx, Montefiore Hospital. And my mother and his mother were like, oh, you know, this waiting room for parents, if we can do something to enhance this waiting room. And that waiting room actually ended up turning into a children's hospital. So I was part of, you know, watching my mother. She was a great example, and still is a great example, of giving back to the community. And also she has orphanages in Lithuania, where she's from. So that was the foundation. You know, when I saw it, I then wanted to do it. It was like monkey see, monkey do. So growing up, I always was involved in charity. And I remember 13 when I was that age, and when my friend died, and when my mother said, come on board and help, I did. And then growing up and wanting to be involved more. And then when I discovered other charities, you know, I'm like a teenager at this, and there's so many charities, and my mother's, get involved with this one, get involved with that one. So I did. And then for children and animals, there's a great cause for me, because when I have a talk radio show, so I love to talk. So for me, I love being a voice for the voiceless. And children to me are the voiceless, and so are animals. They're the voiceless. No one can help them unless they ask or unless you notice that they need assistance. So children and children in need and children who are bullied and children who are less fortunate, it's part of my passion, my heart virtue, to help them, to give them a voice, to speak on their behalf, and to let them know that together we rise and we can shine on collectively. So charity and giving back, it's something that I love, because I love being able to wake up in the morning with a smile on my face saying, I helped someone today.
So take us through the process to radio, such an interesting medium. Obviously, we wouldn't be here if I wasn't a fan. But take us through the value of connecting through people or with people through the spoken word and how you expanded into that portion of the work that you do.
First and foremost, don't you just love radio? I think it's a great media. I love radio. I think it's a great way to communicate. So for me, when I was doing television, you know, I was asked to do America's Next Top Model for the first season. So I did the first season, I did the third season, and then I started doing cooking shows. And then quite frankly, I was just like burnt out. I was going all over, I had to be in this studio, that studio, here, there, flying all over New York, Connecticut, LA. And then my agent called and he was like, listen, there's an opportunity for this network, this new network. This was going on 9 years, LA Talk Radio. Do you want to do a show there? I was like, do I want to do a show there? I said, this is like, I don't have to get makeup. I don't have to get wardrobe. Like, of course, this sounds perfect. So I had never done radio before. And I remember my first show, I had no idea what I was doing. And the red light turns on. And my show originally was called To the Max. And it was a lifestyle show, and we talked about lifestyle and all these wonderful things and a lot of stuff, let's say. But my first guest was Chocolate Thunder, Daryl Dawkins. And Daryl and I were doing a cooking show together, so it was natural that I had him on the show. And I remember that on-air light turned on, and that mic was in front of my face. I'm like, this is home. This feels really good. And so 9 years later, the show has grown from To the Max and has turned into Max and Friends. And it's fun to see the shift of my show and how we started at such a superficial level, let's say, into a inspiring, motivational outlet for people to come and hang out with us. I call it conscious conversation. I have one of my favorite guests is Gordana Biernat. She at My Power Talk on Twitter. Mine is at Max Tucci. And I always say, tweet us, be part of the conversation. So conscious conversation and enlightenment and motivating and calling a thing a thing, not candy coating life and just explaining how this worked for me, this didn't work for me, and having these conversations where people write me, they're like, you know, we tune into your show and you helped me get through this week, or you inspired me to do this. So it's, again, for me, it's another almost like a wonderful philanthropic outlet of being able to consciously create conversation that will inspire, motivate, and uplift people. So that's radio for me does that. And being in America, in a country where we could say anything we want, and choosing to have the conversation to enlighten for me is just a wonderful thing. So I'm grateful for Max and Friends.
And I think the biggest thing that anyone who's in, be it radio, television, or any form of media has to realize, and the biggest thing for me to get out of my own way, is that, hey, when you're about to speak, just be you, be real, be authentic,
mm-hmm.
and the only person that knows what you're going to say is you. So even if you flub a word here and there, people aren't really going to care as long as you believe your message. And I think that has value, no?
Absolutely. You know, and I love when you just said that. It's like when you say a word or, you know, sometimes there's a friend of mine, Ashru, he was in the band Menudo. He comes on the show often. And I remember he once did a video and he was talking about perception and he said perspiration, but he just kept going with it. And then it turned from into perspiration into perception. I was like, that's it. Just be real. You know, we're all here. We're all learning. We're all growing. We're all just words are just made up anyway. So go with the flow of the words, be authentic. And the fumble, you know, is when you don't own who you are. If you own your authenticity and you own your authentic self, a word that fumbles you is not going to stop you. You just keep going. I think at the beginning of the show too, I said virgin instead of virtues, but whatever, it's just part of life.
Well, being a virgin can be considered virtuous by some. And a first time experience is always can be a virgin experience. See, so it all ties together. I think there's value in that too. You know, you mentioned being a lifestyle expert. Now, that's a term that seems to be a bit of a buzzword in certain entertainment communities. But for those who might be listening who don't know what a lifestyle expert is, what is that, and how does it become
I don't
one?
Even know. I don't even know. The term came when I was on the Tyra Banks on America's Next Top Model. There was a gentleman on the show, Derek, and Derek, he brought me on the show, actually, and he said, oh, you have to be part of this show. It's going to be amazing. We don't know really what it's going to be, and I had just come back from living in Italy at that time. And Derek knew about, you know, my family's restaurant, Delmonico's. He knew that I was into entertaining and really being in the social world and a great life. So, and that was his perception. You know, this, oh, Max travels. Max knows, he knows dining. He knows this. He knows that. I'm going to call you a lifestyle expert. So this is, oh, gosh, I think whenever the first show of America's Next Top Model, I think that was like 2003 or 2004. So that term I still don't understand today because lifestyle is a subjective word. For me, lifestyle expert means that I'm great at what I live and I'm an expert in my life. But that doesn't necessarily mean it's your life. So everyone is a lifestyle expert. If we're living life, like I always say, my catchphrase, to the max, if you're living your life in a way that's exceptional, you're a lifestyle expert. It's basically those three words, your life, the style and you live it, and the way you make it, you're an expert in or an expertise in your style of living. So I think that's just what it is. We all have it if we live great lives and if we live a life that's authentic to who we are.
And I think living authentically means learning continually. What are some of the biggest life lessons you've learned by being in the public eye?
One, to if you're going to post on Twitter, wait till 2 hours after you leave. And all joking aside, that the only thing that's constant is change. And being available to change and grow and learn, I think, you know, and always if you're going to be in the public eye, and this is just in life in general, I think, if you're going to associate with people, be kind, be compassionate, be loving, be real, and be yourself. And I think that's, for me, the biggest lessons that I've learned. Because I remember when they were trying to groom me into being someone else, it just didn't work. And I had a publicist at the time who was like, Max, we can't say this, we can't say that, you can't do this, you can't do that, you can't wear this. I said, like, this is so fake. This is not me. And it just felt uncomfortable. So I think when you're in moments of something feeling uncomfortable, there's a shift and a change. And observe it. So that's what I've learned about this whole wonderful world of entertainment. Just being in that moment, observing who you are in it, and understanding your role in it.
And obviously, I mean, with all that you've done and the various television shows, the various radio shows, dealing with the public has to be an interesting trip. Do you have any stories of just adoring fans or people who connect with that image you portray, and then it's like, wait a minute, you only know the bit of me you see on television or hear on the radio. Have you had that moment where it's like, huh, they're seeing a very little sliver, but they don't know all of me?
You know, I have. And that's why I think with the radio show now, I always say my life is an open book, because I really try to share everything I can. You know, obviously privacy is a lost art these days, but with social media, people know what you're doing. They know who you are. They can Google you and know more about you than you know about you, even though your life from when that Google thing came up years ago has changed in a million directions. But, you know, one time, I think there's the scary side of it is when people, they become stalkers. And I've had a stalker, and it was very interesting because I had to hire a private investigator. We were getting the calls at the house. It was a really weird period of time. And I remember the investigator saying, you know, well, the good thing is that we think we know who they are, but we don't know if they want to sleep with you or kill you. And I was like, oh, like what, this is like Whitney Houston Bodyguard all of a sudden. So for me, that's when I was like, okay, sharing everything where I'm going to be at that moment in time and where I'm dining. And with social media, we do that. When I'm not home, where I am, it gives an opportunity for people to approach you. And people, the majority of people are loving, and, you know, we share great times and stories together. And I love when people come up and they're like I mentioned before, you've inspired me, you've encouraged me, you've gave me motivation. So I love that. But when you get the freakiness of it and the other side of the fan following, it can be scary. So one thing that I learned was post where you are 2 hours after you leave.
And this is just strictly a fun off-the-cuff question. What's the weirdest thing you've ever autographed for a fan?
Oh my gosh, it was a death certificate. They had, like, they didn't have paper, and they were, like, going to the town hall or something, and we were at this gig, and they were there, and they just stopped by, and they're like, oh, can you, and I was like, what is this? They're like, oh, we have to go to, like, get our probate court or something, and this is all we have. Can you sign this? I was like, signing. So I was like, I'm not signing a death certificate, but I will sign your arm. So it went from the death certificate to the arm.
All right. You also have a book for people to check out. How did it come to be that you took the spoken word, turned that into the written word, and got it out to the masses, so to speak?
Yeah, well, you know, there's now, I've been a contributor, gratefully, to 3 books. Al Roker did a book called Big Shoes in celebrations of fathers and dads and fatherhood. So that was the first time that I really was involved in the literal world, into books. And it was really great to be able to, again, share a story. Well, you know, we all have a story. And when someone gives you the opportunity to tell your story, like Al Roker gave me, it was a wonderful expression. So it kind of got the juices, creative juices flowing, like, oh, this is a very cool outlet. Because you can sit and think and rewrite and really have clarity in what you want to write. So Al Roker, he was the first one to give me the opportunity, and I wrote a story about my father and him growing up and how we lived all over the world, Italy, New York, Connecticut, and the restaurant. And then I did another book for a friend of mine, Eduardo Zoll, and the book is called, he was on the show Extreme Makeover and Home Edition. And the book is called Extreme Entertaining Made Simple. And Eduardo came to my house in Italy, and I did a huge dinner party for him and his friends. And he said, oh, I would love for you to be part of my book. So again, I was able to, because there was photography involved, was show my creativity. So with Al Roker, it was writing. Now with Eduardo, it was my creative work being photographed. And then, oddly enough, Josh Sapin, who is he's one of the big wigs over at AMT, he called me and said, Max, The Office called and said, we're doing a book called The Big Picture, and it's all panoramic photographs. And there was a picture of Delmonico's, and they wanted me to write a caption about it, and my grandfather and the restaurant being that it is America's first fine dining restaurant, which established in 1827 in New York. And he said, would you write something for me? I said, absolutely. And they sent me the picture. I said, whoa, Josh, like this isn't Delmonico's. This is the hotel, not the restaurant. So, and he goes, oh my gosh, how did you know that? I said, well, because I'm in the process now of doing a book about my grandfather and about Delmonico's and about self-value and self-worth and how Delmonico's restaurant really, when my grandfather took it over in the 20s and then it carried it through the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, was a restaurant that people really celebrated life. They dressed up. They went to dinner. Going to dinner was a huge deal back, especially in the 30s and 40s. And 50s was the most glamorous time. So there's been a story that has never been told, which is my grandfather and my father's story and Delmonico's from the 1920s through the 1980s. And so I started authoring that book, and really I was given a key to the archives of Delmonico's. And when I opened those archives, it was amazing what I found. Pictures of Gypsy Rose Lee, Ava Gabor, Red Buttons, and Mrs. Babe Ruth, Babe Ruth's wife, and just Virginia Graham, amazing people, used to dine at Delmonico's, including Elvis, and he sang about it in one of his movies, and Marilyn Monroe, and every president. Delmonico's has served every president. So I said, this is a story that I think is a fascinating culinary story. And being that I'm the grandson of Oscar Tucci, and I have all of these documents and photographs and these archives, I have to share them. So that book, I'm still working on it. It's actually been a 10 years in the process of writing this book. And we're doing it. I call Delmonico's the culinary roots of a beautiful culinary tree. So to be able to tell that story and to share America's history and New York's history is something that's really exciting. And that book, it's the elephant birth. You know, I feel like I'm pregnant with this book for now more than 10 years. But I know that in the end, the result is going to be a beautiful book. So there are three books that I've done, and now this one I'm still working on. So the literary world was very welcoming to me, and I enjoy it big time. It's a great way of expression. And like I say on my show, we all have a story. And Jackie Collins used to come on my show all the time. We had such a great time. And someone had called in and said, Jackie, you know, how can I write a book? And she said, if you write one page every day for a year, you'll have 365 pages. So if people are inspired now to write a book, start with a diary. If you want to tell your story, write a page every day. And at the end of the year, you'll have your book.
And I would think the art of storytelling, which is an art form that literally goes back centuries, is just changing in how we receive the information. So for folks who have a unique story, but they don't quite know how to tell their story or how to put it out there for folks to kind of enjoy, what's your advice, having been around so many different story arc forms, for folks who want to tell a story but they don't know how to get it out there? What's your encouragement to that group of our population?
Absolutely. Well, for starters, if writing isn't something that comes naturally to you, try speaking. You know, we have so many devices that record now. So record yourself. Do a video. Record yourself on your phone. Get a recording app. And record every day your story or what the story is you want to tell and why do you want to tell it. I think that's the most important thing first. Why do you want to share your story? And what do you want people to get from it? And then before you start writing, really have focus and clarity on what is it that I want to write and why do I want to write it and what are people going to take from it? And I think when you answer those questions, then you'll be able to have that natural flow come out. So for me to advise and to give encouragement to upcoming authors and people who want to write their story, know what it is you want to write and why you want to write it first. And then if you can't write, there's tons of ghostwriters. To be able to go online, you could Google search ghostwriters. There are a million people out there who can help you write it. I'm sure if you go to Fiverr, there's someone there that can help you, or record it. And then just start translating and start sharing and being real and being authentic in your story and share it. And there's millions of books. So to have your own book, even if you don't publish your book, even if your book is just for your friends and family, do it. Now's the time.
So the Max and Friends LA Talk Radio show, I assume, is a weekly show. Tell people about the format. Tell them where and how to tune in, and what will they hear when they tune in.
Yeah, thank you for giving me the opportunity to plug the show. So Max and Friends airs every Sunday night on LA Talk Radio, 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 8 p.m. Pacific Time. Max and Friends, it's conscious conversations. My guests will come on. We're there to inspire. We're there to encourage. We're there to help really create. And we want you to be part of that conversation, that conscious conversation. We want you to join in. So I love when people tweet me. My Twitter is at Max Tucci. I tweet back. Email me. My email, max@maxtucci.com. I want listeners to be part of the show. I always say without my listeners, I wouldn't have a show. I need my listeners. My listeners are the ones that motivate me and inspire me to do shows and give me ideas for shows. So when you're tuning into Max and Friends, it feels like we're just in a big old living room, a bunch of friends together, having conversation. The show is turned into that. And Gordana Bernat, follow her, y'all, at My Power Talk. She has a new book coming out called Hashtag Know the Truth. You should definitely have her on your show. But so, and I just love, I always have a great guest on. Celebrity guests come on, inspiring guests come on, motivational speakers come on. The show is really has facets of guests, from mistresses to housewives to reality stars to, we had one time even a murderer. At the time we didn't know, but that was a freaky show. And now we've really, we're focusing on the whole kind of Super Soul Sunday thing, where you can just come, hang out, sit down with us. And again, every Sunday night on LA Talk Radio, Max and Friends, you can go to latalkradio.com. We also have a free app, the LA Talk Radio app for all smartphones. So download the app, and like I say on the show, you could download the app and take me to bed with you every Sunday night on LA Talk Radio's Max and Friends.
So speaking of app, being a food connoisseur, critic, being involved with cooking shows, what's the strangest thing you've ever eaten and liked?
And, oh, a two-part question. And liked. Well, the strangest thing I've ever eaten but I didn't like was tripe, and that was in Italy. But the strangest thing that I've eaten and I actually did like were sea urchins. And we were in Greece, and we were on a boat, and someone dove down in the water, pulled up these ugly, spiny little creatures, and literally opened them, and there was this sea urchin inside, kind of like an oyster. And I was like, I am not eating that. And I ate it, and I was like, that is pretty amazing. And then another bizarre thing is jellyfish. There was this Chinese restaurant that I went to, and someone had ordered jellyfish salad. I was like, I am not eating that. I ate that jellyfish, and I was like, wow, this is good. And then I started like reading up on jellyfish and how healthy the benefits, the health benefits of jellyfish are. And it was a pretty interesting thing to eat. And again, strange things, you know, bizarre foods are out there. So liking them is the part that I find very difficult, because another one that I did was duck tongue, and it was just disgusting. So there's a lot of bizarre foods out there.
All right. I love this question because it opens up really interesting dialogues. So suppose you had a worldwide audience and they were captive. You were the only television or radio station for a predetermined length of time. If you could tell the world just one thing in that moment, what would it be and why?
That's a great question. So thank you for that, because it's my response to everything in life. Where we are at this exact moment is where we're supposed to be, period. And then people can take that into any direction they want. You know, when you're in traffic, realize that you're supposed to be there. Stop stressing. You can't force time. You can't force nature, like the flower that grows, to segue back to that. You can't force things. So just be in that moment, be in that space of time of right now, and know that where you are is exactly where you're supposed to be.
Counteract that, though. For folks, they say 66% of our world lives on less than $2 a day. So there's people that being in a place of extreme poverty is where they're supposed to be. I personally agree with you, but I can certainly see where a critic would say that can't be true. People that are suffering are where they're supposed to be. How would you respond?
I would respond to, we each live our own life. All souls are divided. Everyone lives their life. And remembering that someone can live on $2 a day, but we don't know their state of happiness. You know, when you go to places like, if you go to Africa, if you go to India, some of the money-wise, poorest people are some of the richest spirits. So for me, realizing that, yeah, we have suffering, yeah, we have judgment, but realizing that all of us collectively, we're all on this planet, we're all here, and together we rise, and just realizing that I'm in this moment, for other people who are suffering in that moment, there's a lesson to be learned. I don't know what the lesson is. You know, people call karma, if whatever you give, you get. What, you know, every action has a reaction. So I think removing the judgment on where other people are at the moment and realizing where you are at that moment for yourself, what is your life all about at this moment?
To me, and I've always said, for everything there is balance. And so for everything that is dark, there is light. For everything that is light, there is dark. And the truth is in the balance of the two. I mean, how can we show gratitude if we've never been through hardship? And how can we build the tenacity to overcome hardship if we don't have things to be grateful for? It's the art of balance.
Mm. Yeah, and duality too. And also, like you said, light. If we never experienced darkness, we would never experience light. If we never experienced happiness, we would never experience, if we never experienced sadness, we would never experience happiness. So there is, you know, there is that balance to it. But I think gratitude and being grateful is something that we all are naturally born with. And then patterns in pathology, and we're taught that things are this way and that way. And then we start separating ourselves from source. And we are all the source, and we are all the creators of our life. I believe that strongly. I believe that what we think we can create, if we can see it in our mind, we can hold it in our hand. If we can see it in our mind, we can create it with our hands. So we are the creators of our life. We're the creators of our destiny. And I think, for me, it took a long time to realize that. And I remember when that happened. My father died when I was 8 years old. And I remember for years I was so mad. Like, why did you die? Why did this happen? I was so mad. And I was at this ashram, actually, in Florida, Kashi Ashram. And I was walking around the property there. And I had this realization that his death gave me my life. Because if my father had never have died when I was 8 years old, I would probably still be working at the restaurant. I wouldn't have been able to live my life. So at that moment, it was like I freed myself of the anger of why did you die and why did this happen? And once I let that anger go, it was amazing how just the shift happened and being grateful for the life that I have and being grateful for his death, which I know people, when I say that, they're like, how could you be grateful for his death? And I think we had this commitment already that that's what was going to happen. And then I was able to then fulfill my life story. So it goes back to exactly, without sadness, we couldn't understand happiness. And without anger, we don't understand joy.
And the interesting thing is an unexpected death is the greatest way to learn the fragility and wonder of life. Again, balance.
Mm. Yeah. Balance is a beautiful thing. You know, it's like a rocking chair. If you go forward on it, you're good. If you go backward on it. But when you're just in that middle place where you don't have to rock and it just rocks you naturally, that's balance. That's a beautiful flow.
Another thing about balance, you know, your work with America's Top Model, obviously the aesthetics of physical beauty emphasized there. But beauty is, in the eye of the beholder, one, but it's also emotional beauty, spiritual beauty. What is true beauty from your experience of this world?
True beauty is bliss and laughter and smiling. To me, that's beautiful. When heart virtues, when you get chills because something has moved you so much that you can chill or you can start to weep or smile and laugh, that to me is true beauty. When you're in a group of people in a space where there's joy rising, to me, that's what beauty is. It's interesting. I was on the subway about maybe 2 months ago, and when I was younger, I worked with this woman, Beth Bolt, who discovered Naomi Campbell back in the day, and I worked with her as a photographer's assistant. So I was always in this model world, plus my mother was in the fashion world for years. That was her career. So I was on the subway one night, and I saw this beautiful girl, and she was stunning, beautiful, tall, the skin, the face, everything was so beautiful about her physically in the world of modeling. And so I approached her, and I said, do you model? And she said, no. I said, I'm going to get you a contract. This is happening. So she's like, okay, and she's looking at me like cross-eyed. And then I called Beth, and I put Beth on the phone with her. This is all happening at like midnight in the subway. She probably thought I was crazy. The next day, she emails us her photos. We get her an appointment with a top, huge agency in New York. They loved her. They had her come in, and they said to her, we love you, but you have to lose 2 inches from your hip, from her legs. I said, and she called me, like, devastatedly crying. She's like, oh, they want me to lose 2 inches. I don't know how I'm going to do it. I don't know if I'm going to model. I said, hold up. So I called the agency. They go, listen, Max, it's not that we don't love her. It's that our clients are very specific in what they want. And this was just, and I grew up in the fashion industry. And at that moment, I was like, this is really a disgusting industry where someone who is so beautiful, they love everything about her except for 2 extra inches on her hip. It drove me crazy. We had this conversation, this girl that I discovered, and I said, you know what? Don't worry. We will find someone who's going to love you for you, for the beauty that you are, because I see it. I already see her on the cover of magazines. And so, you know, the agency is now working with her to help her lose these 2 inches. But it really, the industry, there's that great song that says, don't read beauty magazines because they will only make you feel ugly. Don't read beauty magazines. You know, it just goes down to that.
And I can share a similar story. As an interventionist, I work with all sorts of folks. And so one day a client of mine sent me a client who's now a really good friend of mine who was in or trying to get into the modeling industry. And she was what the world would see as picture perfect. And she called because she had compulsions of self-hatred and she, you know, really wanted to love herself. And she said, one of the most poignant things I ever heard, she said, I wish I saw myself as beautiful as the rest of the world does because the competition makes me feel ugly. And over the next several months, we started to help her see that she actually wanted to mentor young ladies who were getting into the entertainment world so that they didn't fall into the pitfalls that she had, which included drug use and an eating disorder. And it was just so interesting to me that her desire was to kill the pain of an image-centered society.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's a powerful story. And there's a lot of truth to that. It is, you know, when it's easy to get caught up in the glamour, but then we have to realize that when we see one picture, that one cover shot took a full day, took a whole team of people, hair, makeup, wardrobe. And at the end of the day, when that girl is not on that cover, she scrubs her face off and she takes her hair out. She's just living her life normally. So to get caught up in the facade of life and the smoke and mirrors, I think is something that really, as a society, we need to observe and say, there's more to this than image.
Could there be? Theoretical question.
Yeah.
Could there be a counter to that and a natural beauty industry versus the staged or airbrushed beauty industry? And how do you think that would change society if something like that, a company that accentuated natural beauty, no makeup, just beautiful as you are, how do you think that would change society?
Well, you know who's a great pioneer in this is Alicia Keys. When she started doing the no makeup, not getting the hair done, everyone was like, what is she thinking? And when we realized this is how we were really born, we were already born, I think we're all born beautiful. And when, you know, being in an industry where everything is made up, and to me, it's almost fake, to realize, like, when Alicia Keys did that, I was like, yes, this is who you are. And I can really see who you are I can see into your eyes. You know, there's no makeup that's preventing that. I can see directly into your soul. I can see the beauty in who you are. So it's almost, it's encouraging to just be who you are. You know, I have a home in Boulder, Colorado. And one thing that I love about Boulder is that people are naturally beautiful. They are who they are. There's not makeup. Very few people there wear makeup. They're not dressing up. There's a joke that says the more holes in your shirt, the more zeros in your bank account. So it's a very, very natural state of being. And being that I grew up in New York and especially into a family that was high society and everyone was always dressed up and the jewelry and the makeup, the hair, the this, to be able to come to a place like Boulder, Colorado and just to be in the present moment of nature where people are their natural self really opened my eyes to seeing how beautiful humanity really is.
So what do you think the biggest curveball you've ever been thrown has been thus far? Television, radio, just something that caught you off guard and taught you a lot?
Wow. There's so many. There's so many curveballs. Like you said, being flexible. I think one is, this is a very tough question and a good one. One in specific. You know, I can't really think of one because I look at all of them as such great learning opportunities. But one, I think, is trust in friends. And when I was on TV more, surrounding myself with people who didn't want to be friends with me, but they wanted to benefit from what I had. And I think, you know, to me, it was actually like really heartbreaking because I love entertaining. I love people at the house, lifestyle expert, etc. So for me to have friends that didn't want me as a friend for me, but they wanted to just be part of the extras, I think that's what was one of the biggest curveballs, was trusting people, and they turned out to be something completely different and just wanted to be part of the ride. You know, Oprah once said, do you want to be, something to the effect was, I want friends who are going to ride on the bus with me, not friends that want to be in the limousine with me, something to that effect. And I remember when that quote happened, and I said, you know, that's what I feel like. And so since then, really just keeping, there's a lot, even though it's a public life, I live a public life, but keeping privacy still something close to me, and not just allowing people into my life, really just wanting to know, why do you want to be a part of this? And when that experience happened, it shook me. And I still kind of feel awkward talking about it because it was a moment where I was like, why would people take advantage of me? And it just was uncomfortable. And I think that's what it was. It was, when you're on the top, people want to be your friends. But when you're not working so much, and this is an industry where if you have a gig at that moment, I have a dear friend of mine, she was on a huge TV show, the same kind of scenario. And then when she wasn't on the TV show, you see really who your friends are. So just friendship, the friendship aspect, I think, of the curveball.
I can share a similar story. I had a mentor who had been in entertainment for a whole bunch of years. And when I first met him, I was a starstruck early kid who had just gotten into broadcasting, was living my dream and all that good stuff. So he came to do a seminar with us to try and teach us about presentation. And I hung in the back of the room because I was starstruck. Here's a guy I'd seen on TV a whole bunch of times. So I'm, you know, doing the starstruck thing. And unbeknownst to me, one of my mentors, who I was really good friends with, had asked him to single me out, to said, hey, Scott's got a lot of talent, but he doesn't believe he belongs. Can you pull him aside and do something to shock that out of him? So we're sitting there, and everybody goes to lunch, and Tom says, hey, come with me a second. And I'm like, uh-oh, this isn't going to go well. What did I do? How I'm sitting running. I haven't said much. I don't think I said it. I don't think I said anything wrong. And he says, come with me. So we walk. We're in this warehouse-type building. We walk back to the men's room in the building. And he says, all right, we're in the men's room. I'm going to use the men's room, just like everybody else. And in that moment, it's like, huh. His point was, regardless of who I am, I put pants on, I pee, I have a bad day, I have a good day. And I never got starstruck again, because here's this guy who's been all over the world, performed in 100 countries, and he's like, I pee like everybody else. And it was that moment, just like you talked about. It's like, huh, you know, yeah, when you're famous, people think you do these really different things, but you do the same thing as everyone else, just more people pay attention.
Absolutely. And they pay attention with a magnifying glass sometimes.
Sometimes they do. So going through the remainder of 2017, you mentioned about the book about your family legacy. What else is on the docket for you the rest of this year that people need to know?
Well, the rest of this year is definitely more shows on Max and Friends. That's a given. I just love radio. I love being part of that show, my show. And also continuing the TV show that I started. Season one of Eye on the Peep with Max Tucci was great. It was such an amazing experience. I interviewed Sophie B. Hawkins, who I love, Daniel Green. There was a great interview, Ron Bergeron, Alligator Ron. He was the same thing, kind of like your story. We were talking, and Pete, you know, he's this multi-billionaire. He's built some, constructed some, basically all of South Florida. And he's, and when I asked him the question, you know, about his life, and he said, oh, well, I really enjoy, I said, what is it that brings you your bliss? What's that brings you passion? And he loves rescuing the lions, the mountain lions, not mountain lions, the panthers, rather. And mountain lions are in Colorado. The panthers of Florida, and also preserving the ghost orchid. But he said to me, kind of like the same thing that that gentleman told you, he said, but I still put my pants on one leg at a time. So continuing to find people like that, to bring them on the television show so we can have season two. And then I'm available. So whatever it is that, you know, life is going to bring this way, I'm available to do more television, more radio, more, just more sharing my life and sharing my gift of motivating and inspiring, and just being present is what's 2017, and getting this book finished, I think, is going to be great. So, and actually another project we're working on is at Delmonico's now, which is, go there. If y'all are into a good restaurant, go down to 56 Beaver Street in New York. We're creating one of the rooms, the Oscar Tucci room, which is in honor of my grandfather. So, that's going to be exciting to do that. And then I have some really fun things, with some really cool people. And to drop a name, Whoopi Goldberg and I are going to be doing something great, so stay tuned to that.
To fast forward your life, 30 years from now, your legacy is drawing to a close. If you created your ultimate legacy, what will people say, and what will you have done?
They will say, Max Tucci lived life to the max. And what I would have done, I want to die empty. Whatever I have that I can give, I don't want to bring it with me. My joke is, if there is reincarnation and we come back, this is it. This is the last life. I don't want to come back. I'm really I'm enjoying life. And when it comes to the end of that moment, when I take my last breath, I want to know that I've died empty and that I live life to the max.
86,400 times every day, we have seconds. Moments in time, snippets of time, where we can make a difference in the world. If somebody really wants to make a difference, what do they do?
Smile.
People need to do that more often, I think.
It's that simple. Smile. Because when you're walking, that one, it takes 1 second to smile. And I promise you, and I say this on my show, if you walk down the street and you smile at someone, 9 out of 10 times, I made that number up, but they'll smile back at you. Smiling is contagious. And when we smile, it naturally gives the endorphins. It gives us a good feeling. So smile. And compliment
the
people. Be kind. There's so many things.
There you go. The localized show you're doing now, is that available online? Is that only in local market? How do people get a hold of the current show you're involved with?
Television or radio?
Television.
Oh, television. Yeah, you can. It's online. You can go to, I think it's ionsouthflorida.com, EYEONION, southflorida.com. And the show, Max, is up there and it's running. There's the first season, I think, was 7 episodes. So actually, it's Facebook today reminded me that 2 years ago I interviewed David Bromstad from HGTV. So that should be up. You know, the funny thing is that when I do the show, I don't watch them after. So I actually have to go on there and look. But it's ionsouthflorida.com, and you can catch Eye on the People with Max Tucci there.
The one person you haven't interviewed, living or passed away, who do you interview and why?
Oh, this is like, I love this question because I kind of do the same one with dinner parties. Who would you say? And I'm going to ask you the question after. But anyone, oh, wow, as of today. Well, you know, that's a tough question because there's so many people. I would say, as of today, Alan Watts. I would love to sit down with Alan Watts and have a good conversation with him in Boulder. Why? Because Alan Watts is someone that I listen to his teachings, his recordings, and he really inspires me to live life naturally, like the unfolding of a flower. So it'd be Alan Watts, the philosopher.
All right. We've got 5
minutes.
Can
I throw you a question since you gave me that? Let me throw you a question.
Oh,
so if you were to have a dinner party with 6 people, 8 people, however many people, 8 people, we'll cap it at 8. If you were to have a dinner party with 8 people, who would they be?
Oh, good gosh.
Living or dead.
So I'm going to – wow. All right. I think I'm putting Vince McMahon, the head of WWE, in there for business. P.T. Barnum goes in there for entertainment. Billy Joel goes in there for music. Esther Hicks for the esoteric. I'm up to 5. JFK for politics. Martin Luther King for social rights. Gandhi for spiritualism. And I don't know who 8 would be.
You would be there.
Yeah, there we go.
You're the 8.
There we go. There we go.
Yeah, no, that would be a really good PBS special. That would be a good show to have all of them at that table.
I think we'd need 9 just to have a moderator. I don't know who we put the moderator at.
Yeah, you would need a moderator, a good one.
And I think it's that because I think every form of art, every form of entertainment, every form of expression, there are teachers in that art form. And I think we're here to learn and contribute and grow. That's the 3 reasons I believe that every person exists.
Mm.
So I tried to bring together people that would cause that to happen.
Yeah. It's kind of like the Maya Angelou, when you learn, teach. And I think that dinner party would be a lot of learning and teaching, and then you'd be able to go out and then teach forth. That would be a good dinner party.
There we go. All right. We've got 3 minutes remaining. What can we plug? Social media outlets, websites, and all that good stuff.
All the good stuff. So my Twitter, again, @MaxTucci. My Instagram, you can go, but by the time I accept you, it'll probably be a year from now because I'm not on there, but it's @TheMaxTucci. And I love to get emails. So really email me, max@maxtucci.com. Let me know what's going on in your life. Join me on Max and Friends. I love really the show. When you come on the show, you'll see how it's just, again, we all just hang out and chill and have a good vibe. So that's what the show is about, and come and join us. Be part of that conscious conversation. And when we do the show, tweet me. When the show is live, which it usually is on Sunday nights, be part of that Twitter conversation. We'd love to answer questions and have people part of the show.
I was going to say, is the show live to stream, or is it often pre-recorded?
The show, for like 8 years, I always did a live show. And then when I bought this house in Colorado, I was spending so much time there. So I was given permission to record the show, and I was very clear and upfront about it because my listeners were always used to having responses and being part of that live show. So at the beginning of the show, if it's a recorded show, I'll be upfront and be like, listen, I'm in Colorado right now, but the show is being recorded. So I'm enjoying Colorado, and I'm glad you're enjoying the show. So it depends. It really depends on where I am at that moment. But I'm working on doing, again, more live shows as I my Colorado house is coming, you know, it's beautiful, it's finally getting together, so I'll have more Sundays available. I was traveling a lot, so I wasn't able to do live shows. But we're going to have more live shows, and they're just fun. And if you tweet anyway, we're always on Twitter. If I'm not, then I'll have someone send me a message, oh, someone just tweeted you. So we're always having a conversation with the show, even if it's not live.
All right, we've got just about 60 seconds remaining. Any final plugs that we got to get out there?
The final plug is to say thank you, and I'm grateful to be on your show, Scott. It's been a lot of fun this hour. This is the illusion of time, man, because this just went by, and it was a good time. So thank you. I appreciate it.
And I appreciate you being here, and I appreciate the opportunity to have a very intriguing conversation. We've got 60 seconds remaining, which means you can go back in the archive. You can give a listen to the 350-plus shows we've done. Also, if you're a pro wrestling MMA fan, we've got another network just for that, 80 shows over there. Give us a follow on social media, if you will. Two options there, Scott Golden, Golden Opportunities Coaching, or nearly 48,000 of you on Twitter. Can't all be wrong, can you? At PO Perception on Twitter, good place to go. Discounts on services. Find out what we're doing over here. Above all else, keep your feet on the ground, your mind in the moment. Until next time, everybody.